and welcome to React Native Radio. Today is a special episode. It's actually episode number 100. So we've been doing this, I guess, since August of 2015, I think. So, you know, it's a pretty big deal for us. So we're pretty excited to be here. And we actually have a pretty good panel today and a really great guest. So I guess I'll go ahead and get to the introductions. I'm your host, Nader Dabit. Today on our panel, we have Gant Laborde from Infinite Red.
Hello!
Peter Pykarczyk.
Hey, everybody.
And our special guest today, talking about everything from IoT to virtual reality and augmented reality and maybe even a little bit of training, is Vladimir Novik. Welcome to the show, Vladimir.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. If you're like involved with the React Native community, you may have heard of Vladimir, but if not, can you give us a quick introduction to kind of like who you are, why you got interested in React Native, and kind of what you're working on right now?
Yeah, sure. So I kind of started with programming like a while ago when I was a kid, I guess, and leading several teams and doing architecture for like various companies. And at some point when React came out, I jumped in. And obviously when React Native came out, I was like, yeah, sure. Of course, I will start using it because it looked amazing, right? And also considering the fact another guy in Israel, we started React.js Israel community. So I started with React Native, I think, from the day one when it was released. And from there on, I was building various apps with React Native for various clients and talk about React Native, AI and AR and IoT and various stuff. And also consult, doing workshops and stuff like that.
Very cool. So how is the community in Israel? That's pretty interesting. I don't think I know too many people that are involved with technology there. Is React pretty big there?
Yeah, actually it was, well, when React was released, Angular community was really big and React was like started to, like most of companies started to adopt React from the day one, and they understood the benefits of React, and the community grew exponentially. And right now there are like dozens of companies that do React on a daily basis and React Native. And actually when there was React Next Conf 2 years ago, I was on the team at the beginning when we organized this conf, and we kind of made a list of companies that use React. And I think it was like around 70 or 80 companies that used React 2 years ago. So right now, you can imagine it grew exponentially, and like lots of people in community and like meetups every month or so and stuff like that.
Wow, 2 years. That many companies? That's crazy. 2 years ago, where were we at with React? 2016. React Native has been around at this point for like a year, right? And we were still using React 0.14, right? So
yeah,
kind of the humble beginnings.
Yeah. And actually, one of the really great experiences for me with React Native at the very beginning, there was hackathon at Facebook offices in Tel Aviv. I think it was pretty much the same, 2016, something like that, around August or something. And it was really great hackathon. They brought a team from Android side and from iOS side, and they helped people to like create their own thing. And we actually, the team we assembled during hackathon, we actually won in, like, there were three prizes, and one prize that we won was in category of the most extraordinary app. And it was kind of gaming-ish experience on, you had a map, and you need to move on the map, and you had sort of a torch that you pass from person to person. And when the torch falls on the ground, a half an hour, or if you just push a button to drop it, then another person in the same area as you can pick it. So we created this app for both Android and iOS. We were three people, and we did this in 6 hours, I believe. So it was back in the days when React Native was not as stable as it today. So that was like a big change for also for me, like to understand how great it is, and that this is basically the future of native apps.
Yeah, this is actually if you want to see not only the history, but also pushing React Native to its limits, you want to follow Vlad on GitHub. You want to follow him on Twitter. You want to follow him everywhere, because the day we met, you told me some of the projects you worked on. And I was like, dude, that's an amazing list of stuff. And I enjoyed very much kind of going through your GitHub libraries, from everything from like Internet of Things to games. You developed games in React Native, Bluetooth stuff. It's insane how many things that you've done in React Native.
I think it's probably the fact I'm just like trying to push things to the limit. Like I even had a talk last year at React Next about things you didn't know you can do with React Native. And I thought, like, how cool may be to take Unity 3D game, which is like a different gaming engine, right? So, and just like compile it for Android and try to wrap it up with React Native and stuff like that. And you definitely can do it. I'm not sure it will work in production though, in terms of performance and stuff like that. But I mean, you can go to really, really extreme with React Native, and especially like recent announcement, React Native will get React architecture for synchronous calls and stuff like that. And there where it will shine even more than it shines right now.
Yeah. Anybody who was there, you had just one of the coolest presentations in React Native EU. You're on stage, you're holding a light bulb, and then with React Native, you clicked a button and the light bulb in your hand turned on. And I think they got a photo of it, right? And
yeah,
it was probably one of the neatest moments at React Native EU for me.
Yeah, thanks. Well, Mike did a photo, a really great photo. And actually, like, I will be doing a workshop at Chain React about the smart homes and IoT and React Native. And like, everyone will experience the same light bulb moment. I think you've called it, right? You've called the, when you called over the phone, you called it light bulb moment, right?
So now that we're kind of on the subject of Internet of Things and working with smart homes and stuff, can you kind of just give a quick overview of like what IoT is, and then where does React Native fit into this, into like what IoT is, I guess?
Yeah, sure. So IoT, or as it stands for Internet of Things, means actually anything and literally anything you can connect to internet, or not even internet, even Bluetooth, stuff like that, and communicate with it. So consider, for example, your fridge. So if you connect your fridge to the internet, and your fridge has this like LCD screen with, I don't know, weather notifications, stuff like that, this is one thing. But you also can connect the fridge cooler to this LCD screen to control temperature, to control various things. Or you can, for example, and this is like the really basic thing to get started with, light bulbs. You can switch your regular home light bulbs to the ones connected to internet, and you can control them from your phone or from your web page or stuff like that. I think, Gant, you have like the whole home is connected to internet or something like that, right?
Yes, but please don't turn on and off my lights right now.
Yeah. I can, but I won't.
I knew it.
Yeah.
This dashboard at home with like all of our like light switches, you know, and you can just like, oh, I'm going to mess with Gant today and like turn off his lights and pretend like there's something going wrong.
No, actually, like it required, it was just a joke. Because like in terms of security, for example, it requires a little bit more than just like, you know, having the person address and like web page stuff like that. So like, get back to the topic of Internet of Things. So sometimes recently it goes even to extreme. Like we have even connected toilets or connected toothbrushes, which is pretty insane, if you ask me. It's like there was one picture I usually put it on my slides when I talk about smart homes. And on the picture, there is a couple speaking about whether they will go out for dinner. And the guy says to his wife, honey, we need to go out for dinner because the refrigerator doesn't want to speak to a stove. And like it's hilarious, but it's kind of true because like Internet of Things, so you still need to be connected to internet. You still need to need Wi-Fi. So you need kind of to deal with security, to deal with like internet shortage, stuff like that. And still, you cannot rely only on this. Like you cannot have, for example, connected door lock that won't work without Wi-Fi, right? Because, for example, if you don't have electricity at home for some shortage or something like that, then you kind of stuck outside. So in terms of how you communicate with the Internet of Things, there are various ways, but usually there is some kind of bridge that is connected to your home router. And this bridge basically has API and you connect via Wi-Fi like to do on the same network, and then you can just like switch your lights on and off. For an instance, there is Philips Hue company, which they create really good lights. So their light bulbs work on Zigbee protocol that talks to the bridge, and then like you talk to the bridge. You don't talk directly to the light bulb itself. But there are some like cheaper solutions. There are some products that work only Bluetooth Low Energy or work only via sockets connection. It's usually the cheapest ones work on sockets connection, and it's pretty hard to reverse engineer them. But basically, there are various ways to connect to them. It's not that complicated, though. People usually, when they think about React Native and connecting to smart homes, they think it's kind of super complicated. It's not. It's just like you need to know a little bit of electronics and if you want to mess with devices themselves, and you need to know a little bit about protocols themselves and reverse engineering.
That's awesome.
So Internet of Things, in terms of like what we're used to, API and clients, is very similar, right? So if I were a React Native developer, and I'm used to writing calls to a traditional server, right, with some API, I can sort of do the same thing with React Native, right? There's not like a whole different protocol for API servers for Internet of Things, right?
It depends, because like, for example, for Philips Hue, you just call fetch and deal the same way as you would deal with the server. Actually, you have kind of the server running on your bridge and you just connect to it, right? But there are various other products that use other types of connections. For example, there is a company, there are actually a line of products called Wemo smart plugs, Wemo lights, Wemo other door locks, stuff like that. And they work differently. You actually need, or you use their own app, or you need to like set up your own server that will connect to the product, and then you connect from React Native to this. I actually, at React Amsterdam, I open sourced a library. It's called Smart Home Manager. And this library basically does the whole reverse engineering things for Philips Hue, Wemo, and I think it's Magic. Yeah, it's Magic Blue. This is a company of like cheap LED strips, light bulbs, stuff like that. So this library, basically, you install it on any machine, on your computer, home computer. You can install on Raspberry Pi, on anything that runs Node. And then you run your Node server. You basically create your own bridge that consolidates every, like these three types of brands inside one manager that gives you out like three controllers for different brands. And then you can control them without like messing with reverse engineering protocols and stuff like that. But there are other products that sometimes they have different texture or different APIs, mostly or fetch or Bluetooth or sockets. Mostly it's like that. Sometimes it's a little bit different, like in, for example, for Wemo.
That's awesome. So you've basically made the smart light universal adapter.
Yeah, sort of.
That's great. Now, the biggest confusing part, and maybe you have a good answer to this, or maybe you don't, getting a smart device like a Raspberry Pi ready to go and kind of like showing it, I always have to show it at home. If I've got it doing something interesting or something like that, do you have, what's your like kind of go-to strategy for, hey, this needs internet. I'm going to bring it over to this new location, right? And then I want to get it on the internet so it can check the weather, or it can flash every time my sports team scores or something cool. But the problem is, like, the second you leave your house, it's basically useless because I can never get it to connect to anybody's internet without hooking it up to a monitor and a keyboard. Do you have to go through that same experience every presentation that you go to, every conference? Are you doing that same step, or do you have tricks?
Well, actually, I have kind of go to conferences kit, sort of. So when I bring Raspberry Pi, basically what I do, like connecting it to monitor, this is the most problematic thing, right? Because like you go to conference, you don't have monitor, you need to search for a monitor. So with Raspberry Pi, basically what you do, you configure it in the way that you can connect with SSH if you're on the same network. So I usually set it, it's kind of hack, right? So I set it up at home on my phone tethering. And then when I go to a conference, I'm still on the same net. So I don't need to set up anything, right? Because like I'm still on the phone, right? On phone hotspot. So this is one way. The other way, for example, for React Amsterdam, it was more complicated. And you remember that we sat in a lobby in your hotel, and I was like with a bunch of devices and router and stuff like that. And apparently, yeah, there was
actually security. I have to tell the story. Yeah, that was hilarious. There were people walking around, and then just Vlad's in the entire hotel just plugging into walls left and right. I'm working on stuff, the MC. He's just got wires going across the floor.
Yeah. So yeah, I usually like if I need to bring like really complex things such as like, well, router and a bunch of smart products is not that complex. Sometimes I bring electronics with me, then it's probably the most complex thing. Because usually when it looks like DIY thing, right? So passing through security is always, it's not kind of problem, but like you cannot take DIY electronics device on a plane or in your checked-in baggage, right? Because people will freak out. So you kind of need to assemble everything on the place, like where are you good? So with smart, it's a router, network, and connect everything to network. But with electronics, sometimes it requires a little bit of soldering, and yeah, sometimes it's really complex. So sometimes I say, like, I envy people that come to a conference with just an app or just a demo without any electronics, because I never know if it will work. Yeah.
Outside of wires and hardware, for the folks just getting started with React Native, can they use Expo to build IoT apps?
Also, it kind of depends. Let's say if they have Philips Hue at home, I would say definitely, because they just call Fetch API. And actually, if they have just regular, like, if they have Philips and Wemo and these magic blue light bulbs, they can just use my smart home manager and build their own bridge, and then they definitely can use Expo, because they can communicate with the bridge the same way as they communicate with the server. So on at React Amsterdam, I build GraphQL bridge, so they communicate with GraphQL to the bridge, which consolidates three different smart home devices. That's pretty cool. So yeah, definitely they can use Expo. But if they want to connect, let's say, with Bluetooth Low Energy, I actually don't remember if Expo has Bluetooth library or how compatible it is. Because for Bluetooth connections, I usually use React Native BLE PLX. And this library under the hood, it uses Rx Java or Rx Swift. And it's the best one that I found, like, really, really good for Bluetooth connections. So, yeah, I hope this answers the question.
Absolutely. I think that's a great response.
So if someone wants to kind of get started with some of this IoT stuff with React Native, what should they do? Like, where should they go? I know you have a library that you mentioned, but what else is there out there?
Well, the easiest way is to buy some Philips Hue light bulbs, like just the one light bulb. Don't need to wire up whole home, right? So you just buy a light bulb, buy a bridge, And then you can go to Philips Hue Docs, which is pretty extensive, and they have getting started section, and it's really, they have like guides how to get started and how to use your, just communicate with your bridge. So it's pretty simple, and you can do that with Expo definitely. And basically the only thing is just having Philips Hue, and the rest is really simple.
So let's move on to kind of the next topic. That's going to be VR and AR. I know there's quite a bit of options out there right now with React and React Native around VR and AR, but can you kind of give an intro about maybe what that looks like right now in React Native as far as the ecosystem is concerned, and just kind of talk about that to get us started, I guess?
Yeah, sure. Well, with VR and AR, let's talk a little bit about VR and AR, because sometimes people confuse these things. Like with VR, obviously it's virtual reality headset. You're immersed in some other reality 3D world of sorts. With AR, like people when hear AR, sometimes they think it's AR that it was 5 years ago or 6 years ago. The AR that was an overlay of an image over a real world. So AR in that you use with React Native and ARKit or ARCore, that are basically the libraries that's created by Apple or by Google, they are not actually the AR we are used to have 5 years ago. So this AR works in the following way. It analyzes the whole room you're in, and it analyzes surfaces, and it can put objects on your real surfaces. So it's not overlay of an image. Like imagine you have a table, so you have an app with AR capabilities. So you look at through your camera on the table and you will see a surface drawing on the table. Then you can put 3D object on this surface, and while you walk around this object, it will be will stay there. If you have some physical forces applied to this object, it will be like I mean in the rendering engine, it will apply them also to the surface, so the physical world table. And this is pretty amazing capability, right? So with React Native, when ARKit came out, I think it was around July last year. So there is a library called React Native ARKit. And it kind of wraps ARKit API, which is pretty straightforward, by the way. And then there is a library called ARCore, React Native ARCore, which wraps ARCore API and the respective API for Google. But API is a little bit different, libraries are a little bit different. So nowadays, they're a really good solution for AR and VR. There is a company called Vero Media, and they created Vero React, which is really amazing thing. It's a library you can use in React Native, and you basically can create both VR and AR in your React Native application with custom models that you can import, various animations, even skeletal animations. Like, I mean, you have, for example, a character that moves his body, so you will see that, not just basic animations. They have their own rendering engine, which is pretty performant. And this is a really good solution right now to just get started. It's completely free. So you go to their website, you just get an API key, you get an email with the API key, and you can just use it. There is another solution, and it's a really good one. And also you can always write your native code yourself and just drop it for React Native and call it from React Native. But I don't really see any need of this right now, because like Vero has been pretty amazing lately, and they have plans for like even multiplayer AR and VR, which is really amazing thing. It's actually one of the picks I wanted to mention at the end of this episode. So it's one thing of just try it out and try to play with it.
Yeah, actually, Vero Media, I didn't hear about them until you had mentioned them before, Vlad. And I know you're going to be talking about AR at the conference, which, by the way, your talk will be recorded. Everybody will get a chance to see it. But what's funny is we had an interaction with them after you mentioned them. And so what's really cool is, since we should be coming out after Chain React, one of the things that we have is we'll have the app source code available, and we have an augmented reality portion of the app. So there's another example that people will be able to like try out and see some augmented reality with the Vero library. And that was 100% with working with that. It worked out splendidly. Yes, yeah, I say that now.
Yeah, that's right. They have Figment AR, it's called. It's an app which is open sourced, and you can try various things with it. You can go through portals, and it's specifically a feature I really like with AR. Yeah. Like, it's called portals, and basically you have kind of a gate or portal that's drawn in the real world. You go through it, you're in VR world, and when you turn back, you see your real world. So it's kind
of cool. That's so cool. Oh, yeah. My goodness.
So I'll have a bunch of portals also for a chain react, so you'll see
nice
things coming out of from portals. Yeah,
I'm also a big fan of Vera. That's kind of the first time I've ever done anything in AR. I didn't try the VR, but getting an app up and running in AR was pretty easy. I think the toughest thing about working with AR and VR is getting the textures and stuff like that to work correctly when you're dealing with these complex objects. Have you ever had any experience with any of that stuff? Like getting, for instance, I had done a demonstration where I had coded like a dinosaur into like the environment, but I was unable to actually get the dinosaur's skin to like actually look correctly. And then also there's when you're dealing with AR and VR environments, you're working in, of course, you know, another dimension. So instead of just having the XY axis, you also have the Z axis. So your big thing is getting things like lighting and shadows to work correctly. Have you had any experience working either with textures on these 3D objects and or, you know, dealing with the extra things like lighting and shadows?
Yeah, I actually work also with the Unity 3D engine, so I kind of know how, like, I know NVIDIA CG language, and I can script my own shaders, so I kind of know how shaders work. So it's not that complex. Like, if you open CG code for shaders, it looks really like as a gibberish or something. But the basic idea for the materials and textures is, like, you have several properties that you just memorize their names, like you have diffuse, you have specularity, stuff like that. You have PBR, which is physical based rendering, has like five or six different layers of textures, and every layer is basically laid over like on top of each other with various properties. So for example, you have specific layer for shadows, specific layer for the texture itself. Normal map, which basically means how you will see light reflects from the texture. So, for example, if you have, let's say, a brick wall texture, okay? So I have just a regular drawing of a brick wall, and you put it on a cube, you will see a cube, it will be really flat, because the 3D cube, the mesh of the cube is flat, right? So you won't see these bricks as you would see in a regular wall. But if you add, for example, normal map basically will tell the light to reflect from the corners of each brick to look like it's modeled as a brick. So lots of things you see in 3D games, in any 3D object, most of these things are not the actual modeled mesh. It's just the shader, and it means like how the light reflects from the surface, or like bounces from the surface, or absorbed by the surface. So, for example, if you can have a sphere, just 3D modeled sphere, and you can have a shader that will turn the sphere to a lava ball, or it can turn this sphere to be like, I don't know, some glowing orb or stuff like that, just to emit light. So everything, these things are done through shaders and done through materials. So as to the question regarding experience, I do this like on a daily basis for in Unity 3D, and done this with the materials and Vero. It's just important to understand the concepts. When you understand the concepts of how light works in 3D, it's everything is the same. It doesn't matter which framework you use, if you use Vero or if you use Unity 3D or if you use Unreal or CryEngine or whatever engine or anything. It just the important. It's important to understand the coordinate systems, physics, materials, and shading. And when you get into it, it's not that complex. It's not a rocket science. It's just three.
What about lighting? Like, so for AR, what if there's a lot of lighting in a room? Is there something that sort of picks up the lighting and applies it to your model? Or do you have to figure that stuff out on your own?
Well, the basic lighting is applied to the model, but you need to, like, if you want additional lighting or different lighting, you have components, ambient light, only light, directional light, which is basically a light type. So if you want, for example, to have a cube in your room and you don't need any specific lights, you just want it to take all the lights from the real world, right? So you just take this object, apply proper material state, and it will just work like without lights, like in the real world, right?
Like, where do you find these things for your application? I know it's hard to actually build these unless you're like really good at graphics and animations. So, like, where do you find these graphics?
Well, in terms of graphics, you can find like various places. There is Turbo Squid website where you can buy premium graphics.
Yeah, Turbo Squid's based here in New Orleans, so gotta.
Yeah, so there is a Turbo Squid. There are, for textures specifically, there is textures.com. You can buy stuff there. Sketchfab, you can buy things there. But one, the main thing I use for 3D models, textures, materials, basically most of 3D stuff, Unity 3D game engine, it has a dedicated asset store. Where you can go, you can just download free models, you can buy models, you can buy environments. And it goes really, like in terms of prices, for example, you can buy, let's say, steampunk city environment, like the full environment with lights, with materials, with everything, textures, everything, for $30 or something like that. So, or $50, something like that. So it requires a little bit more than just buying it from Unity Asset Store. So it requires to go into, like, you get a bunch of files. So you go to Unity 3D Engine, you just need to find FBX or OBJ files, which stand for, these are basically 3D models. Find materials and textures, and you just use them in your Vero app or any AR app. If you're working in Unity, you just use them in Unity. But I mean, in React Native, you cannot use Unity with, well, you can, but it's not production ready, right? Using Unity with the React Native. There is also a program called, I forgot the name. So the program basically lets you paint on 3D objects. So this is for premium textures, right? So, for example, you have 3D model without any textures applied. You open this program, and it's kind of like a Photoshop in 3D world. You can paint your textures, and then you get all your texture layers. In addition to being able to do that, they have a really big library of premium textures with real life scans. For example, if you want ground textures, they have like the texture looks so real that you cannot differentiate between real ground and the texture itself. Yeah, so these are main websites I use for like downloading 3D content. Sometimes I do a little bit of 3D modeling, but really like I'm not good at 3D modeling. So I do a little bit Blender here and there, which is a free 3D modeling app, and a little bit of texture painting, but it's more like for fun and not for like any solid projects or stuff like that.
What was the name of the tool that you said is kind of like Photoshop, but for 3D objects?
Yeah, I forgot the name. So.
Okay, got you. That sounds really, actually really cool. I need to find out what that is. We'll figure it out maybe and put it in the show notes.
So the tool is called Substance Painter, and library with real life scans of textures is Substance Source.
Cool. Well, we're going to be wrapping up here soon because we're getting short on time. Is there anything else that you wanted to cover that we haven't really talked about so far?
Yeah, I just want to say, like, regarding the AR in general, I will give a workshop at React Native Europe, and we will build AR game in React Native during 4-hour workshop. So I hope I will see you there, right? And I think you have the workshop at the same time, right? No.
Yeah, I'm doing a workshop there using AWS Amplify, so I'll be there for sure.
Yeah, I hope our workshop times will be different so I can attend yours and you can attend mine. That will be definitely cool.
Totally, that will be awesome, hopefully.
Yeah.
Cool. I think that we'll go ahead and get to the picks now. Gant, do you have any picks?
When you start a new project, typically you need things like a domain name, hosting, things like that. When I choose hosting, I pick mine for the options it gives. I like to know what I'm getting and set things up just how I like them. This is why for your projects, you should check out Linode. Linode servers feature native SSD storage, a 40-gigabyte network, and Intel E5 processors. That's all the power you need to run VMs under full control or Docker containers, who doesn't love that, encrypted disks, and VPNs. Plus, they have 10 data centers across the world and add-ons like backups, Node Balancer, and Longview to help you control your server costs. They also offer block storage for your static files, and you can get started with a $20 credit if you use the code REACTNATIVE2018. That credit is good for 4 months on their 1 gigabyte server. That's a lot of time to try them out and see if they're the right fit for you. That code again is REACTNATIVE2018. Also, if you're interested in working for Linode, they're hiring. Head to linode.com/careers to see their available positions.
Yes, this is related to code, but not specifically React Native. Hopefully I can end up eventually doing some stuff that ties all these cool things together, but this one wouldn't be able to. But I just wanted everybody to know that TensorFlow.js got mixed in with face recognition, and they released a library. Actually, this guy, he calls himself Just a Dude Who Hacks. So that's his that's his GitHub handle, Just a Dude Who Hacks. He released Face API. See how programmed I am? He has faceapi.js. And the cool thing is it uses WebGL to do all the processing. So you can actually do Facebook. You can do face recognition purely inside the browser. And I thought it was super cool. Everything this dude writes is really nice for machine learning. So Just a Dude Who Acts /face-api.js is his library.
Nice. Definitely will check it out.
Yeah, I saw that making the rounds. I've been wanting to check it out. So that's awesome. I'll definitely have to do that now.
He's also extremely nice on Twitter, by the way. I suggest following him. It's really cool. Great community of people who are making open source. So definitely good to get a feel on those people. Very nice.
Peter, do you have any picks today?
Yeah, so my main and most exciting pick is Chicago JS Camp, September 26th. It's a few months away, but we've got an amazing lineup. It's a grassroots effort. We've got several local Chicago speakers speaking too, so we've got a lot to show off. You can learn more at chicagojs.org.
Yeah, plus one for that conference. I'll be there. We'll be there actually with AWS sponsoring the event. And if you want to talk about anything React Native or any of the stuff we're working on at AWS Mobile, stop by and holler at us. We should have a booth there, or we'll be there. So, Vladimir, do you have any picks?
Yeah, I have several of them. So, the topic I want to point out. Recently, ColdStack released a library called Rebolt and Rebolt Navigation, which is totally amazing thing if you want to do React Native in Reason. So definitely check out Rebolt and Rebolt Navigation for navigating between screens. And there are some docs, which was a problem previously with JavaScript bindings for Reason for React Native. There were no docs, so adoption was really low. And right now there are plenty of docs, and they working on these docs daily. So yeah, I'm on Discord channel, so I see how they really push this. So you definitely should check this out. There is one pick. Another pick is the workshop at the React Native Europe in general, and hope to see you at my workshop at React Native and AR on building a game. The other one is Vero Media for AR. And the third one regarding, like, before the pick, I want to mention something regarding the Smart Home Manager library. So if you want to, like, contribute, do a lot of cool stuff with various IoT things and smart homes, so I will really, like, if you want to contribute to this library and you don't need, you don't know how to start, just ping me on Twitter. I will definitely help and definitely need contributors on this one. So these are the picks.
All right. So my picks are, the first one is the Open GraphQL Medium publication. We're kind of trying to create a community that is completely open to any contribution. So if you're in the GraphQL community and you want to talk about something and you want to get your publication in front of a lot of eyes, we have a growing number of followers there. And we have a Twitter audience as well that we're trying to grow. So if you're looking to blog about GraphQL, ping me. I can get you onto the publication as a writer. And for certain circumstances, we're also paying contributors. So if you're interested in that, you know, ping me there as well. And this can be about anything, GraphQL, as long as it's kind of like fairly well-written articles. So if you want to talk about Apollo, Prisma, if you want to talk about, there's another, Hasura, and of course, AppSync, some of the stuff we're working on, that would be a great place to put that. Also on, I think it was Friday or Thursday of last week, I open sourced a React Native enterprise social messaging app that I'm calling Herd. So it's kind of like similar to Twitter. So if you've ever wondered how a real world application might look, this is kind of completely, you know, from everything from authentication and authorization, fine-grained access control, working with the database, you know, following people and then having their messages show up in your feed. It kind of has all of that real world functionality built into it. It's not just one of those Twitter clones that kind of keeps everything like, you know, in your memory or something like that. This actually works with the real data source. So it's open sourced on my GitHub repo. We're using AppSync as the data store and the API, and we're using Amplify to use authorization and authentication. So yeah, check that out and give it a star if you're interested in something like that. Well, I guess that wraps it up then. That was episode number 100, so kind of big milestone for us. Thank you for listening. And Vladimir, thank you for coming on and joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And really great to be 100th episode.
That's awesome.
It was great having you on this 100th episode too.
Well, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you all next week.